Hello and welcome to another episode of Bare Books Podcast with me, April Berry.
And me, Daisy Ray. Today we are talking to Jude Lennon. She is the author of Kintsugi. We're going to tell you all about it and we're going to meet Jude and have a good old conversation.
I don't want you telling us too much though, because I've only got to letter number 13. I know that's most probably quite cryptic, letter 13, but the book is, well, let's see what the book is about. So Eve has the perfect life, a loving husband, a lovely home and a beautiful family. But the arrival of a bundle of letters from Doris, a woman she doesn't know, poses questions she never thought she'd have to answer. As each letter is opened, it uncovers shocking revelations about a past that Eve doesn't recognise as her own. Will Eve have the strength to face the truth about her family's fragile history? Can she accept a flawed and imperfect past, or will she break beyond repair? Kintsugi follows the lives of two women separated by time, fate and distance, but united by the truth which has been unspoken for years.
Perfect.
That most probably explains letter 13, because at this point where I am in the book, Eve has read 12 of these letters that she's received in this bundle from Doris.
I think it's fascinating. I think Doris is fascinating. Kintsugi is the perfect title for this book with this fractured family. This book is simply written and engaging. I could easily have sat and read it in one go had I not had to work for a living. I always assumed I was not a family saga kind of girl. And that was without ever reading one. The word judgmental comes to mind. When April and I started Bare Books Podcast, the first book we reviewed was a family saga called Flint, and I was hooked. Kintsugi by Jude Lennon is also a family saga, and I found myself fully engrossed in the lives of Doris and Eve, two women separated by circumstance and family skeletons, high drama and murder. Although I'm putting murder in invisible inverted commas, well, you can't see them on a podcast. For the first two-thirds of this book, the story was told via a bundle of letters sent from the past to the future, and I adore that format. I was reading Doris's letters over Eve's shoulder and living every mixed emotion right along with her. I've never read a book written in this way, but I definitely approve. It's hard to learn family secrets you can't address and have no control over. It's harder still to have your love and family ideals tested as you learn people aren't who you thought they were all of your life. The language in this book is conversational, unpretentious, and easy. It's not a long read. It could easily have been a lot longer and a lot more involved, but the fact that Jude Lennon didn't go down that path actually worked for her. I see her on an organic writing path that started with children's books to short stories and now a novel. And I'm definitely looking forward to more from her.
Me too. I was so glad you didn't give a lot away in the review. But I, like you, felt myself looking over Eve's shoulder to read those letters. I like family sagas, especially well-written family sagas. And I'm in agreement with you about this book. It's well-written. It's easy to read. It is very engaging. So I've possibly still got some shocks and drama to come.
No comment.
No. Let's now hear how Jude wrote this book, the journey she took, and some of the thoughts.
Yeah, introducing Jude Lennon. Thank you so much for joining us, Jude. I think it's amazing that you've taken the time out of your schedule.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for asking me.
You're very welcome.
We have got a series of questions to bombard you with, and I'm going to let April kick off with that.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Welcome to the podcast, Jude. Thank you very much. I'm going to start the interrogation. Right. So I absolutely love the letters and the way that the story is kind of built on the foundations of those. So what inspired you to choose this format of storytelling?
Well, I knew I wanted to do a time hop, but I just wanted it to flow, to feel like it was flowing. And I don't know, the idea of the letters just popped into my head. And also, I guess because Doris, the letter sender, is of an age who would have written letters. That would have been how they would have communicated with loved ones. So it just seemed to be the right thing to do. Yeah, so I thought, and I wrote it, I wrote the first letter, and I thought, oh yeah, no, that does actually work. So that's why I kind of kept along with that line. Sometimes the story tells you what needs to happen in the layout, and that's kind of really what happened. Well, Doris, I guess it was Doris. Doris told me, I want you to give me letters. So that was that.
I love Doris. I think she's such a character. Such a character.
Yeah.
She's a real mix of old school and wanting to be in the future of where life should really be. She was like a mix of absolutely everything. It's like, I want everything now.
Yes, yes. I think she'd be a good dinner guest.
Oh, totally.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. I'm not sure anyone else would need to speak.
Probably not. Or be allowed to, even. She was fun to write. So, yeah.
It really says something when your characters tell you what they want to do.
She did. In fact, Doris was the first character initially. It was a 3-chapter short story that I was going to include in my collection of short stories, but none of the others had chapters. And when I sent it to one of my beta readers, she just said, no, she said, Doris needs her own book. And so she said, take that out and work on Doris. And so Eve kind of came after Doris was already in the frame, as it were. So yeah, so that was really strange, the way my friend just said, oh no, Doris needs her own story. You've got to work on that. So that was that.
And talking of Eve, for me, had suppressed memories from the first 5 years of her life. Even though she can't remember it later on in the story, I think the memories are there in her brain. Is that how you wrote her? Is that just my mind working overtime?
It's not how I wrote her, actually. I just, but it that makes sense what you said, actually, because I think all of us probably have suppressed memories from when we're very small. And yeah. We don't know that we're not aware of them, but maybe they impact on what we do in things that, in ways that we don't realise. So that would make complete sense for Eve, I think. Yes, and it's probably more of, well, she kind of got the déjà vu when she went back to the old house. And I think it's probably more that you sort of go somewhere and think, oh, I've been here. Have I been here? I have been here. Okay, that's strange. But it wasn't something that I consciously wrote in there, but I can see that is a possibility for her. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it occurred to me when I realised that her son was called Robert.
Yeah, that's maybe.
Because although she would never have met Robert, because he was, without giving spoilers away, she would never have met Robert.
No.
Stopping right there. I am sure that the family would have been talking about Robert and she would have heard those conversations, even though they may have tried to not let her hear them. Kids do.
Yes, yeah, and they would probably have been hushed conversations and whispered and sort of...
It just makes them more intriguing, doesn't it?
Yeah, 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 definitely.
Kids are extremely intuitive and file things away and don't realise that they have, and then it comes out later on.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. So that's really interesting that you've kind of made that point, because I said I hadn't really thought of it, but I think you're absolutely right. I think she probably did have those suppressed memories from childhood that kind of did impact on her. Yeah, absolutely. Even down to the name of her own child.
Can you share some insights into the writing progress for this book, especially sort of transitioning from what we understand writing children's stories and short stories into actually writing the novel? I mean, you have alluded to it a little bit, but I want you to elaborate on that if possible.
Yeah, because I only ever saw myself as a children's author. I was an early years teacher for Donkey's Year, so I was always writing for children. That was my comfort zone. And I'm in a writing group called Revolting Peasants, and we meet once a month and we write around a theme or a topic. And one month we all decided we'd give each other an additional challenge. And my challenge was I could not write for children. I had to write something for adults. And I liked it. And I thought, oh, this is quite freeing. I mean, not that I write anything too graphic in any great sense, but I was like, oh yeah, I don't have to write about lambs. It doesn't have to rhyme. I don't have to write about, you know, I can write about whatever I like. And I really liked it. And, you know, since then, my writing group where we meet once a month, I've never written another piece since then for children in that group. They've all been for grown-up.
They've created a monster.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Funny enough, that writing of short stories really helped me, though, with this writing process, because obviously to go from writing 500 600, 700 words for a picture book to 80,000. Like, oh, okay, that's a bit difficult. So I kind of treated each chapter as a short story. That's how I told myself, right, we're writing the short story that just happens to be called Chapter Three today, and that's what we'll do. But the other thing that really helped me was we had a little offshoot group from our writing group called Frank and Friendly, which was filled with four of us who really wanted to get on with a work in progress and get it done. And so we would send each other a couple of chapters a month and give each other really constructive feedback, frank but friendly feedback, constructive feedback. And that really helped to keep me on track as well. Because I think with short stories and also with writing for children, you can bend the rules a little bit. You can say things that are maybe a little bit overblown, a bit exaggerated. Whereas obviously in a novel, it's got to be more real. It's got to sound convincing, and it's got to be real. So in the first short, the short story I did originally around Doris, there was more than one sort of husband she'd kind of got, said goodbye to without getting too much away. And it was a bit, and everyone was like, nah, that's not believable. So it kind of made me refocus and sort of think. So I think definitely being in a writing group and then having that support little group as well really helped. But also treating the chapters as a short story really helped.
How long did it take you to actually write the book then, if you were sort of maybe only writing a couple of chapters a month?
It was about 2.5 years altogether that I was writing it for, and then editing and obviously and everything else. So yeah, about 2.5 years. But as I said, I'm very much a pen and paper girl. So for me, the first editing stage is taking it from the notebook and putting it on the computer. So that's like the first redraft of draft one, if that makes sense. So yeah, so my hand was quite strong by the time I'd written it.
Imagine.
The differences are quite vast between a lot of the writers that we speak to. We have writers that churn a book out in a quarter of a year, and others that take years to do them. And we do have a flash fiction writer and novelist that comes on the podcast. She does it like you. She writes it all out by hand, and it takes her a good couple of years too. And coincidentally, she writes family sagas, How Strange Is That?
Okay, there you go. There you
So
go.
I wanted to ask that why you chose a family saga. Is it because your own family might be a little bit colourful?
No, as again, it was Doris. Doris told, it was her fault, really. She sort of said, yeah, this is what's going to happen. So once I kind of knew that Doris was going to be the main character, but Eve had come into it, I knew there had to be this kind of storyline between the two of them, and that was going to be the main crux of the story, really. So I knew that I needed to have something that would be dramatic enough, I suppose, and have enough of a storyline to work. So that was why, really. Yeah, it's not based on anything, that's happened at all. Although, funnily enough, I have had people who've contacted me and said, I read your book, and that did happen in my family.
Wow.
And you captured it absolutely perfectly. And I was like, oh, right, okay. So
What a compliment.
yeah, absolutely, yeah, definitely.
I think it was a situation years ago that possibly was a lot more common than was talked about, if I'm honest. Sort of brings on quite nicely to sort of Doris and Eva separated by time and distance, but united by shared truths and similarities. Obviously, is that the way that you develop the characters, or did Doris tell you to do it that way?
It was a bit of a mixture with that one, because I kind of knew that they would have similarities running through their personalities, although Eve's quite a different person to Doris, and she's not as strong, and although she's strong in her own way, I suppose, but just not as I mean, Doris is strong, and a strong character as well. So I knew that there would be similarities between them, and that's quite nice to explore, I think, because that's always interesting. I think, people who've maybe grown up apart from their biological families, but actually when they meet up, they actually think, oh God, we've got a lot, we have got stuff that we both do, even actions or things that we re respond in different ways. And whether that is because it's in your blood or whether it just happens to be a coincidence, who knows? But yeah, so I did definitely want to have sort of similarities that would weave the two kind of together in a way that they wouldn't have, that they didn't have, because they didn't meet, so
Yeah,
yeah.
I think they'd have got on if they met.
Yeah, I do too.
But I think they had enough in common to form a relationship and enough differences to make them their own individual selves.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about Kintsugi. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It refers to the Japanese art of repairing broken pottery with gold or sometimes silver and other things. How does this concept relate to the themes explored in your story?
Yeah, well, I think it's because, I mean, I love the concept. I think it's a really beautiful thing, and it's been around for thousands of years. It's, you know, it's a really sort of well-established art form in the Japanese culture. And I just thought it's such a lovely analogy for you know, for relationships or for life in general. If something happens to you, you can either let it completely break you and you can't get over it, or, and this isn't always the easiest option, you can face it and build yourself back up, but there will be scars that are still there, but they just become part of the new you, and that, yeah, that you take those forward with you into your the new version of your you know, your existence, your being, whatever. And I really wanted that. I really wanted it to be a hopeful thing, really, because awful things happen to people all the time. That's humanity, that's life. But it's how we move on and how we heal ourselves and allow ourselves to heal that really helps and really moves us on. And I really wanted to capture that. And it, I mean, you'll know yourself, the research rabbit hole can be deep and long, and I just happened to come across this, and what, because I've always been aware of kintsugi, so when I was googling, I thought, oh, actually, do you know what, this rabbit hole, yes, this one is one that I've not wasted my time on. It just seemed to speak to me, and then that was, and then it was funny enough, it was one of the ladies from my Frank and Friendly group, she went, well, that's your title, that's the title of the book. And I was like, okay, I'll go with that.
It works 100%.
Yeah, absolutely does. I mean, the sort of the concept of, you know, human beings being broken and putting themselves back together, I think that applies to every human being. And it's only at some point in your life that certain human beings are broken and there's no repairing. So I think that that concept of repairing the broken pottery with gold applies to humans as well.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. And I think, well, it's the fact that kintsugi, the genuine art form, it's not a quick fix. It's something that takes time, because they're meticulous and have to put it back together with gentleness and with care. And I think that's really reflective as well, is that there's no quick fix. It's not just, oh, we're better. It can sometimes take a lot of work and a lot of energy and a lot of time, but you can heal.
Yeah, it definitely works on all levels.
So into the book sort of follows Eve's journey to accept her family's flawed past. Is emotional growth sort of something that resonates with you, or because the book was quite deep in that respect?
I've never really thought of myself in that sort of way, and sort of viewing that, but I suppose I have always been a big believer in emotional growth. I mean, writing for one is so cathartic. I mean, that is a wonderful way of dealing with your emotions and helping yourself to grow and to do things like that. And I do think that thing like counselling, where you can go and actually talk things through, are really, really important. And so, yes, yeah, so I suppose it's not necessarily something I thought about when I was writing it, but I guess the importance of emotional growth is important, because if you, again, referring back to the kintsugi analogy, if you are broken, the best way that you're going to be able to recover is by emotional growth, by accepting what has happened, accepting what could be in the future, and accepting that there's time to heal. So, so I guess it was more integral than I'd realised.
What do you hope that your readers are going to take away from kintsugi after they've read it?
Well, I hope they enjoy it. I mean, that's the key. I really hope they like it, and I hope they enjoy it. I hope they like the characters, because I was really I really wanted it to be women characters leading, really, because and we all know this ourselves, that sometimes there's a lack of older female character representation in books. It's all young 20-year-olds, flirty, pretty, you know, everything else, and it's like, well, actually, there's more to the characters than that, really. And so I want people to be able to read this and think, oh, do you know what? Yeah, there's been strong women in my family who might have behaved in this way. There's been strong women that I know who might do this. So I really wanted it to sort of resonate with people who wanted to read a good yarn about two women in the main roles, really. But also, what I suppose I want people to take from it, as well as the enjoyment and the characters, is the sort of the message of healing, I suppose, is the fact that you can have something awful happen to you, but there is still hope.
Yeah. Well, she's not just healing, is she? In a kind of way, Eve is. First of all, she's in her 70s, so she's definitely an older lady and still magnificent, I might add. But she's not just healing, she's restructuring. And a lot of people do have to restructure later in life. And I like that you dealt with that. I think that's a really nice way of doing it.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, because, you know, change happens all the time. Happily ever after doesn't exist because it's not a human cyclical thing. You know, we're always going through things. So, yes, and I think we only ever, you see a lot of sort of movies and films and stories that deal with younger women and younger characters going through that, but not the older ones. So, I wanted it to show that it could happen at any age and you can move on. You know, you're never too old to emotionally develop. You're never too old to change things. You're never too old to look at possibilities.
Well said.
Absolutely well said. So, are any of your characters known to you in real life, or is that a complete secret?
No, they're not. I mean, obviously, as we all do with writers, you might take little bits and pieces from somebody, but no, they're not based on any characters at all. No.
So all your imagination then, Jude? Yeah.
You have a dark streak through your imagination then, Jude.
Yeah, do you know what? It's interesting because when I wrote my short stories, I did quite a dark one set in an old museum where I grew up in Southport. And I sent it to one of my beta readers. He went, "Oh, this is a dark Jude." He said, "I like it, but it's dark." So, yeah, so sometimes, and I said that was the beauty of writing in the writing groups, the fact that I could explore those kind of things, those kind of themes that I haven't obviously didn't touch on when writing picture books about lambs for children.
Yeah, slightly different. Maybe shades of grey for children, but quite dark for adults.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Can you give us a glimpse into any future projects you've got? Are you writing anything new? What's in store for us for later?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people have been kind enough to sort of say, is there going to be another novel? And I'd never say never. I did sit down to start thinking about it, but I've got so much on because I'm involved in so many projects, all to do with writing. So at the moment, I run a CIC called Build a Book, and we are putting together planet packs for children across the Liverpool City region, so the Merseyside area. And we're busy creating content for that at the moment. And we've just done another project creating activity packs for a road safety charity who are near in Liverpool as well. So I've been doing lots and lots of creative content and lots of writing, but not anything that's out there for people to actually physically buy. So, I think I would like to do another novel, but there's no, I mean, Doris definitely sort of knocked on the door and said, "Okay, when are you getting on with this story?" Nobody else has done that yet.
Yeah.
Some of them have sort of wafted past the window, but haven't knocked, you know, and said, "When's my turn?" So they may waft back and knock on the window at some point, but nobody firm has really kind of done that.
I think you've kind of left the door open, though, haven't you? You potentially, in my mind anyway, as a reader, oh, you know, I'm not in your head, but I think the door is open for a Down Under sequel.
Yeah, a few people have said that, and I didn't write it with that in my head, but a few people have said, well, you definitely could explore that element. So maybe that would be the next thing to do. But I don't know at the moment. I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Don't give too much away, not just for the readers, but for the fact that I'm only 3/4 of the way through the book.
Oh!
I've finished it. I do like to torment her.
Yes, yeah. She does. See, I've got my little bookmark there, look, and that's as far as I'm through that. So don't spoil it for me.
Lips are sealed.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us, Jude. It's been our absolute pleasure to talk to you. We've learned so much, as always. We're always in awe when we talk to authors and the processes that you use and the way that your characters talk to you and the whole writing process, because everybody is so vastly different.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'd spend a lot of time going into schools, and I always say to the children, look, I'm here today to talk about my life as an author, but you could meet another author next week who would say something completely different. And that's because we all do what works for us. And that's the important thing. I think, you know, you can go in a lot of courses and they'll say, you must write this way, you must write that way. But you can take the bits that work for you. And that's what you've got to go with. If you know, if you need to write at 5 a.m. in the morning, then that's what you need to do. If you need to sit in a park bench and write there, then that's what you need to do. So
I agree 100%. There should be no rule book for writers.
One size does not fit all, does it?
No, absolutely. And if you try and fit it into a size that's not yours, it's just not going to sound right. The words will just not play ball.
Well said, Well, thank you so much. It's been a joy.
Yes, thank you very much, June.
Thank you.
Another fascinating conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to Jude for opening up about the writing process and about the book. Found it interesting they're talking about the writing group and the offshoot of the writing group.
She does a lot, doesn't she? She's very into the writing life.
Yes. Makes it a little more real to get Jude's perspective and how Doris was the steer for the book. That was interesting.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? I like the fact that the story is based around letter writing and Jude wrote this book longhand. The two things marry really nicely. And now I've got like a mental image in my head of both Jude Lennon and Doris sat writing their letters by hand.
Wow. Well worth a read. A recommendation from both of us on the podcast for this one.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not often we're in total agreement, but we've done it twice in this series where we've both been in agreement over a book.
Yes, you're right. We have, haven't we?
Yeah.
This one is very different from the first one that we agreed on, but this one, you could take this anywhere and read it under any circumstances, and it will. It's just nice to take you out of the real world for a few hours.
Yeah, and into somebody else's drama.
Yeah, I love a bit of drama.
I do as well, as long as it's not mine.
Thank you, Jude, for that.
Speaking of drama,
yeah,
it's a bit of a tenuous link, but I thought I'd try it. Our next episode is Flash Fiction, and we've asked everybody to write a story around a Harris Burdick image.
Yes.
And it's really funny because I thought I need to do a little bit more research on this. You know, that internet rabbit hole that everybody goes down. I was Googling the images and Googling the sort of stories behind the images. And the story behind the images is just as fascinating as the images.
Do tell.
There is a book that was written by Chris Van Allsburg. And he was one of the foremost illustrators of children's books and has been for a long time. And it's just a fascinating story. The book's called The Chronicles of Harris Burdick. Harris Burdick is a fictional entity.
This particular image was given to us as a writing prompt from Kerry Westaway Williams, who is one of the admins on Books and a Cuppa.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to send us an image of a pottery piece, and it ended up being this Harris Burdick image. So I was aware of the story behind it, but I love it. I think it's fascinating. And I love the image itself, the way that everything in the image is the wrong size. Nothing matches.
I'm just going to throw a challenge out there, though. How many have ever met Harris Burdick?
What sort of challenge is that?
Just one that's possibly impossible to achieve.
You weirdo.
Speaking of things, though, that are not impossible to achieve,
yeah.
Don't forget that we are taking the podcast on the road on the 2nd of April. We will be at Copper Cogs in Long Eaton in Derbyshire, even though it's got a Nottinghamshire postcode. Really weird to speak to people.
We are running a Flash Fiction evening at Cogs. We'll be talking all things Flash Fiction, giving some hints and tips on writing Flash Fiction. We'll be giving out some prompts for stories for you to write while you're there. Might even give you some hints and tips before we get there online, so keep an eye out for those. But we are going to record the evening, and as April said, that's going to be something that we're really looking forward to.
Yeah, so if you want to come along and meet us, not that that's a big deal, but There will be a link on our Facebook page and on our social medias to where you can go and get yourself a ticket. Tickets are free, so you just have to email the admins of Creatives at Copper Cogs and you can come and listen to us waxing lyrical on the 2nd of April, I believe.
Yeah, 7:30 in the evening. Looking forward to it. It's going to be great. We've done one of these before, but we didn't record it last time. So there will be a special episode of the podcast after the fact for anyone that missed it.
And don't forget next week, all things Harry Spurdick, and we've had some cracking stories in for this one.
I think that's about enough from us this week. We shall see everybody next week with Flash Fiction.
Yes, take care of yourselves.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. Now you've had a listen, why not pop over and join us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
And if you want to send in your Flash Fiction submissions, you just need to email us at beerbookspod1@gmail.com. And now that you're part of the Beer Books family, why not share us with all the bookworms and creatives in your life?